Only a little later, in 547 BC, Croesus, the king of Lydia, led a huge army over the river Halys. Cyrus advanced hurriedly to meet him, and an indecisive battle was fought. With winter drawing on, Croesus withdrew to his capital, Sardis, never imagining that Cyrus would dare to follow him, for the city was so far to the west that the Aegean lay only 3 days' journey beyond it, a tremendous distance from the Median frontier. Braving the bitter cold, the Persians shadowed Croesus, allowing him time to dismiss his allies, lurking and waiting for his conscripts to melt away. Then, with Sardis denuded, Cyrus struck. A desperate battle was fought, with the Lydians staking everything on a final unsuccessful cavalry charge. Then came the storming of Sardis and the capture of Croesus himself. In the space of just 6 years, the Persians, so small in number, once so backward and obscure, had made their kingdom the greatest power in the world. Croesus, like Astyages, was spared execution and welcomed into his conqueror's entourage. His fabulously well-stocked treasury was kept at Sardis. Even the gathering of tribute was entrusted to native grandees. The Lydians, however, startled by this magnanimity, interpreted it as weakness. And no sooner had Cyrus left for Ecbatana than the very aristocrats whom he had most trusted, those in charge of the treasury, were rising in revolt. It was a fatal miscalculation. Cyrus responded with furious expedition. Fresh troops, with fresh orders, were sent speeding from Ecbatana. Cities were to be ravaged, rebel leaders executed, their followers enslaved. Harpagus was sent west to take command of the Persian forces. He had no sooner finished off the Lydians than he was looking to plant his standards along the extremities of Asia, right on the shore of the Bitter Sea, the Aegean itself. There, dotted along the coastline, and enticingly prosperous, were the gleaming cities of a people known to the Persians as the Yauna, the Ionians. Emigrants centuries previously from Greece, the men of Ionia remained as determinedly and defiantly Greek as any of their countrymen back in the motherland across the Aegean. Too quarrelsome to present a united front, they certainly proved easy meat for Harpagus. City by city, he brutally subdued them all. Never before had one man's reach extended quite so far. Cyrus, however, far from glorying in his achievements, remained restless and anxious for more. For all the scale of his victories in Lydia, he dreaded the danger that he imagined lurking in his rear. So it was that Cyrus, disdaining to stamp out the revolt in Lydia in person, had instead taken the opposite route from Ecbatana, following the Khorasan highway as it wound ever east. This, for Persians and Medes alike, was to journey back into their past, towards the legendary homelands of their ancestors. He fought his way into the uplands, gazing at last towards the Hindu Kush. This abode of the Aryans, long after the Persians had emigrated from it, had remained the fiefdom of swaggering noblemen, rich and hulking, and addicted to war. Once Cyrus had succeeded in forcing their submission, they were to provide him with formidable new resources of manpower and wealth. The establishment of an immense arc of provinces, stretching from the Hindu Kush to the Aral Sea, served to fence off the approaches to Persia, where they had always been most vulnerable to incursions from the steppes of Central Asia. Gandhara, Bactria, and Sogdiana. These lands, once breeding grounds of menace and instability, were now transformed into bulwarks of Persian might.